This hour's top stories. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the Islamic Republic will return to its nuclear commitments only if the U.S. lifts all of its sanctions first. Iran's foreign minister says it is his country that can set conditions as the U.S. withdrew from the JCPOA and Europe violated the nuclear deal. Also ahead this hour, the coronavirus cases in the United States surpassed 27 million as the figure in Brazil tops 9.5 million. Welcome to the World News. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says Tehran will return to full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal only if the United States lifts all its sanctions first. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says that is the definitive policy of Iran and will not be dropped.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says the country will return to full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal only if the United States lifts all its sanctions first. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, is the name of the nuclear deal Iran clinched in 2015 with world powers, including the US. But America withdrew from the accord under former President Donald Trump and reinstated anti-Iran sanctions. Now, the new president, Joe Biden, said the U.S. will return to the deal, but Iran must first return to full compliance. Iran rejects this, arguing that it was the U.S. that exited the accord and breached its commitments. Ayatollah Khamenei says it is the definitive and irreversible policy of Iran that the U.S. should first lift its sanctions. The leader also says that it's Iran that has the right to set conditions on the nuclear deal, as it has fulfilled all its commitments under the agreement. The leader's comments follow calls by some Western countries to renegotiate the Iran deal and expand it beyond its nuclear program.
But I do believe that we do need to finalize indeed a new negotiation with Iran, and President Biden has a critical role. We have to address as well the ballistic missiles issues, and we have to address the stability of the region. And this comprehensive agenda is to be negotiated now.
Iran has time and again stressed that the JCPOA is non-negotiable. The country rolled back some of its commitments in May 2019, exactly a year after the U.S. pullout. Iran did so after the European countries in the JCPOA, namely France, Britain and Germany, failed to make up for the U.S. withdrawal. Tehran has repeatedly said its rolling back measures are fully reversible once other parties fulfill their commitments. Iran says the ball is now in U.S. court. It says President Biden should now decide on whether to continue the policies of his predecessor or choose a new path. Those policies by Trump under his so-called maximum pressure campaign have already been described as a failure even by some of Washington's closest allies.
Iran's foreign minister has once again rejected any renegotiations of the 2015 nuclear deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA.
We have the JCPOA, which is already negotiated, and that's quite clear. It's a 150-page document. We negotiated and scrutinized it word by word, and then reached a deal. They didn't like some parts of it. We didn't approve of some others. But it's an agreement after all. If the issue is the JCPOA, it can't be renegotiated. If the subject is regional, we will talk to the countries in the region.
Mohammad Javad Zarif was responding to French President Emmanuel Macron, who suggested that Saudi Arabia should be involved in any talks with Iran. Zarif further emphasized that it's the Islamic Republic that can set conditions, as the U.S. is no longer party to the deal and the European Union violated the terms of the agreement. His comments came hours after U.S. President Joe Biden said Washington will not lift sanctions on Iran to entice Tehran to return to the negotiating table. Biden had earlier stressed he will return to the nuclear accord, but only after Iran reverses moves to scale back its commitments. Political commentator George Samueli says the Biden administration is unlikely to return to the JCPOA and only wants Iran to return to full compliance.
I always predicted that the Biden administration would not return the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, that there were no political benefits to Biden's doing that. And therefore, those people, commentators, who have been predicting day after day that at any moment now the Biden administration will come back into compliance with the JCPOA, were misleading the public. What Biden said in that interview with CBS is very much what Antony Blinken, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, said at his confirmation hearings and at his subsequent press conference. It's what Biden said at his State Department speech the other day, which is Iran has to come into compliance, it has to stop enriching, and then, not that the United States will then return to the JCPOA, the United States will then first have to establish that Iran has indeed stopped enriching and that Iran is in compliance with the JCPOA, and then maybe then the United States might return.
Some 200 people are feared dead in northern India after a massive Himalayan glacier broke off a mountainside, causing destructive flash floods. A forceful surge of water swept through the Dahuli Ganga River Valley in India's northern state of Uttarakhand, destroying everything in its path. According to local authorities, 7 bodies have been found so far, and rescue efforts are underway now to trace the missing. Most of the unaccounted people are workers at 2 power plants in the valley. Videos shared online show high-speed water tearing down cranes at the power plants and smashing up bridges and roads. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi said he was closely monitoring the situation. Afghanistan has received a large consignment of COVID-19 vaccines from India. The India-made vaccine is the first to reach Afghanistan as the country battles with the pandemic. Amin Alami reports.
Afghanistan received the first consignment of COVID-19 vaccines from India under India's commitments to support the country and health sector. As officials say, the first shipment of the vaccine would be sufficient for only 3% of Afghan population. This comes as Afghanistan is still struggling with the COVID-19 amid shortage of medical equipment.
India have been a great a partner for health sector of Afghanistan in the past years, and this time this is the first country with again came out in the first line and support the health sector of Afghanistan by donation of 500,000 vaccines. For sure, these vaccines will be used for the health workforce, which are the first line people against war for the war against COVID-19 virus in the country.
Afghanistan has already received different shipments and aid from China, Iran, and the U.S. to fight the pandemic in 2020. As officials in Kabul say, those at greater risk will be the first recipients of these vaccines. But many have doubted such claims, saying the widespread mismanagement of the first wave of COVID-19 in Afghanistan has tarnished the image of responsible bodies, such as the Ministry of Public Health and some other bodies.
We expect the government to really vaccinate our brave security and defense forces, plus those who are involved in fight against COVID-19 first, in accordance to the latest decree of the president. There must be no mismanagement this time.
The World Bank has allocated $100 million and the Asian Development Bank has granted $50 million to provide Afghanistan with the COVID-19 vaccine. Meanwhile, Iran and China are among those countries that have so far assisted the Afghan government in its fight against the pandemic and the different collaborative attempts.
Based on official figures released by Afghanistan's Public Health Ministry, over 50,000 individuals have been infected with COVID-19 so far. Nearly 2,500 of them have died of the disease. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the virus-stricken U.S. have reached the dramatic milestone of 27 million, as deaths have exceeded 463,000. Despite vaccination programs being underway, the U.S. remains the world's worst-hit country by the pandemic in terms of both cases and deaths. Out of nearly 60 million vaccines distributed, some 40 million have so far been administered. On Friday, the U.S. set a new record in daily fatalities with more than 5,000 deaths. Meanwhile, elsewhere in the Americas region, coronavirus cases in Brazil have surpassed 9.5 million. deaths from the disease in the South American nation have surpassed 231,000, the second highest worldwide. A correspondent in Washington, D.C., Colin Campbell, says the U.S. is currently facing logistical issues in the distribution administration of COVID-19 vaccines.
Yeah, right now the U.S. is dealing with the vaccination campaign. And that's really one of the biggest concerns, is that there are all of these people who need the vaccine, especially those that are coming from our elderly populations that are not getting the vaccine as quickly as they were expecting to. So right now, what the White House is facing is a logistical issue. Although they have been able to administer the vaccine in various states, they are still trying to figure out the best way to get it up to the speed and the number of people that need to be vaccinated by the end of the year. If we remember, the Biden administration said that he wanted millions to be processed by the end of the year. But remember, a couple of the vaccines have to be done in two doses. So you have getting the dose to the people in the first round, but then also getting them to come back a couple weeks later. That's also been an issue. Now, we do have a third vaccine that looks like it may get approved for emergency use, and that's from Johnson & Johnson. That's a one-time only vaccination. Now, it doesn't have as high as an efficacy rate as Moderna and the other one, the Pfizer vaccine. However, they are saying that it still helps to protect people from contracting the virus if the virus is around them. So there's been a rush to get these vaccines out to the millions of Americans that are still adversely affected by the spread of coronavirus.
Moving on now, Haitian authorities say they have foiled an attempt to depose President Jovenel Moïse as tensions run high in the impoverished Caribbean country. Prime Minister Joseph Jouf said police have detained nearly two dozen people, including a Supreme Court judge, with money, guns, and ammunition. Jouf added that the detainees intended to arrest President Moïse and install a new head of government. The detentions come less than a week after Haitian opposition figures announced a plan to replace the president, accusing him of despotism and mishandling of the country's economic situation. Political analyst Yamir Chabur believes President Jovenel Moïse needs to step down, but is refusing to do so since he has the backing of Washington.
What we have here is the people coming out to demand that the president, Jovenel Moïse, step down. Supposedly, due to the Constitution of Haiti, he has ended his term and that he needs to step down, which he refuses to step down. And he is being supported by northern imperial states, which is the United States, France, and Canada. His rule is illegitimate when it comes to the will of the Haitian people. The only reason that he is in power is due to these northern imperial states.
Another international TV news channel has been taken off the air in the UK. This time it was CGTN, funded by China. Ofcom's reasons, in its words, were justified, but in the face of who funds this channel and when other channels promote news and coverage against Ofcom's so-called principled guidelines, then this smacks of double standards.
On Thursday, UK media regulator Ofcom revoked the broadcasting license of Chinese network CGTN. Under UK broadcasting laws, organizations that hold broadcasting licenses may be state-funded, but must not be controlled by political bodies. Ofcom gave CGTN time to transfer its license to China Global Television Network Corporation. CGTN had asked for its license to be transferred to an entity called China Global Television Network Corporation, but in the end, the UK regulator claimed that it is not convinced that the new entity would be free from political meddling. This isn't the first time that Ofcom took an aim on the Chinese news channel. The UK regulator had previously accused CGTN of breaching impartiality standards with its coverage of Hong Kong protests. Ofcom accused CGTN of the same violations while covering separate incidents. The Chinese network rejects the accusations, saying that it provides global audiences with accurate and timely news coverage, as well as rich audiovisual services. CGTN said it was disappointed and expressed strong opposition to Ofcom's findings while defending its record as a professional media organization. The broadcaster said it complied with all local laws, adding that it would continue to promote understanding, communication, trust, and cooperation. China's foreign ministry also said that it firmly opposes the decision and accused the British government of blatant double standards and political oppression. The dispute between Ofcom and CGTN could ramp up tensions between London and Beijing, with some people calling on the Chinese government to expel British network BBC in return. China now warned against lodging complaints against the BBC. China's foreign ministry accused the British Broadcasting Corporation of pushing fake news in its COVID-19 reporting, demanding an apology.
Some of the principles enshrined in Ofcom's rules are impartiality, anti-Semitism, and fake news. Yet these rules have been broken time and again by other broadcasters, most notably the UK state-funded BBC, which goes out of its way not to fault Israel for its anti-Palestinian actions. But CGTN is not the only channel targeted by Ofcom. RT and Iran's news channel Press TV have also been on its list. Notice a trend here? Channels that are critical of the West appear to be on Ofcom's hit list. Perhaps the clearest example of double standards comes the coverage of Israel and its atrocities in the occupied territories, especially Gaza. Ofcom has not tolerated channels critical of Israel.
Ofcom has a long history of revoking licenses of channels that are not in line with British government policies. However, it has time and again turned a blind eye on violations committed by televisions or outlets that promote British government's views. In the United Kingdom, all TV and radio broadcasters need a license from Ofcom to operate. The UK regulator claims that it values impartiality, accuracy, and the protection of privacy. It has time and again revoked licenses of broadcasters for what is called breaching the Communications Act. In 2012, Ofcom took Iranian broadcaster outlet Press TV off the air for the same reason. Press TV slammed the move and called it a clear example of censorship. This is while the media regulators took a totally different stance when it came to examine violations committed by a Saudi-funded television channel. In 2018, Ofcom refused to revoke the license of television network Iran International. The UK-based channel gave airtime to the spokesman for a terrorist separatist group who praised a terrorist attack in the Iranian city of Ahvaz, which killed at least 24 people, including children. Ofcom also never investigated BBC Persian channel for promoting anti-Iran propaganda during the 2008 demonstrations. Ofcom, which is an abbreviation for the Office of Communications, is directly accountable to the British Parliament, so naturally, it is controlled by the British government. Some even call it the media arm of the royal family. The same is true with the British state broadcaster, the BBC, which is funded out of UK taxpayers' money. With British media outlets, it isn't just a structural relationship with the government that controls the news output. The British government also enforces direct command over the media through Defense and Security Media Advisory Notices. That is why the BBC promotes whatever the UK government seeks to promote. January 2009, the BBC sparked outrage when it refused to air an appeal to help the people of Gaza Strip during Israel's invasion on the tiny coastal enclave. Experts revealed how intense campaigning from pro-Israeli lobby groups led the BBC management to buckle under the demands from Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, any criticism against Israel's atrocities in Palestine is considered anti-Semitism by Ofcom. The UK regulator, however, has no problem with television networks or websites which constantly promote terrorism, gun violence, or pornography.
Diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Today, despite the negative propaganda of the West, we witness the flourishing of talents of Iranian ladies in a wide variety of fields, such as international scientific olympiads and technological spheres, such as inventions, innovations in nanotechnology, nuclear energy, aerospace, etc. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by the staff of Kayhan International. This article is published under the heading Islamic Revolution Upgraded Status of Women. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. As we celebrate the 42nd dawning of the 10-day dawn to celebrate the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, we ought to be proud of the positive changes the grassroots movement of the Iranian people has brought for women, both at home and abroad. This year's coinciding of the 10-day dawn celebrations with the blessed birth anniversary of the noblest lady of all times, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, the Immaculate Daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, is indeed an inspiration for the Islamic Republic and the values it holds dear, especially concerning the progress of women in society in harmony with their innate nature and on the basis of virtue. As a matter of fact, the auspicious 20th of the Islamic month of Jamadi Uthani also happens to be the birthday, according to the lunar calendar, of the father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, who was indeed a worthy descendant of Hazrat Fatima, peace upon her. He consequently strove to put Iranian women back on the pedestal of dignity after the humility they had suffered under the Pahlavi regime and his forcing of the decadent Western culture upon them. As is evident, women played a remarkable role in the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, and they gained an important status in the cultural and social developments after the revolution. In Islam, there is no distinction between males and females regarding their rights, personal merits, and pursuit of knowledge. In fact, the Prophet has emphasized that women should learn and acquire knowledge. Islam thus gave women the right to education, own property, and choose the spouse. It also granted them the dignity of hijab, which signifies freedom and liberty in the real sense of these terms, thereby earning respect in society and giving meaning to life. As the other half of mankind, it is the virtuous wife who, in addition to providing peace and solace to her husband, plays the fundamental role of mother in building a sound and healthy society by bringing up children in the proper manner on the basis of faith and moral values, factors that rule out immorality and vitiate any agonizing thoughts for parents. Islam has a balanced approach towards women, and it attaches a high value for them. Man and woman are equal humans, but due to their different physical and emotional structure, in some cases, they have different characteristics and rights. According to the martyred Iranian philosopher Ayatollah Murtaza Mutahhari, man and woman are two stars in two different orbits, and each should move in his or her orbit. Their freedom and equality are useful when none of them exit from their natural orbit. After the victory of the glorious Islamic Revolution, basic changes occurred in all political, social, and cultural levels of the society for the benefit of women by providing them a healthy atmosphere for spiritual and intellectual growth that have manifested in different fields, ranging from scientific achievements for Iranian women to sports and cultural activities. For instance, the literacy rate for women in Iran is as high as 85% from the mere 30% before the victory of the Islamic Revolution. According to a UNESCO report in 2012, the Islamic Republic of Iran is among the six top countries regarding gender equality in education. Today, despite the negative propaganda of the West, we witness the flourishing of talents of Iranian ladies in a wide variety of fields, such as international scientific olympiads and technological spheres, such as inventions, innovations in nanotechnology, nuclear energy, aerospace, etc.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us start the day by reflecting on a statement by Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, regarding his immaculate daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her. Surely my daughter Fatima is the leader of all women from the beginning to the end. She is part of me and the light of my eyes. She is the flower of my heart and is my soul. She is a human Huri, who whenever she stands in prayers in the presence of her Lord, exalted is his name, her light illuminates the skies for the angels, like stars shine to people on earth.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This man changed the world.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello, and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World and Still Is. Of course, this program is nothing more than about the life and times of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul. In all the previous programs that we've spoken about and discussed so far, we've discussed the fact that, you know, many revolutions, many ideologies, and many great momentous events in history have claims, but very few of them live up to the expectation that they are meant to mean to the people. Today's session, we're going to look more closely on the slogan that started the revolution here in Iran, particularly, but because it's an Islamic revolution, it was meant for the entire Muslim Ummah. And I repeat that, the entire Muslim Ummah, because Iran, the Islamic Revolution may geographically be confined to Iran, but it was meant for the entire Muslim world and beyond. And that's what we're really discussing here, that how big an impact Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, really made in terms of fact that we have now a very changing world. Once again, I'm joined by Dr. Hassani, an academic and Islamic researcher, and a very warm welcome to you, sir, for this particular session of this program once
again.
Thank
you, sir.
Thank you. Dr. Hassani, we're at the point now where we've looked at these aspects about Imam Khomeini in terms of his life, in terms of his biography. We've looked at aspects of this multidimensional personality. And as you quite rightly said, we're not going to say it all in one breath because that's not possible. And at the same time, that wouldn't do justice to such a great personality, because you talked of him, I remember in one of our previous programs, that he's a mountain. How do you describe a mountain? Anyway, I'm sure you'll be able to do that for us anyway, Dr. Hassani, but the main thing is, the slogan starts with Allahu Akbar, and you very nicely put that in a context where we can all understand that, of one and zero, not as a binary code as most people understand in maths, but the fact that we are the created, we are zero, and don't exist without the one. And in that context, Imam Khomeini himself, such a humble man, would not say anything different. He wanted to get to his beloved. But there are two important concepts that are coming out of this particular revolution, as you quite rightly put it in the previous program. And it's not a claim, this is a reality. First of all, Allah is Akbar, God is great. That's a reality. And then they said Khomeini Rahbar. That meant Khomeini is the leader. What went wrong in the last few centuries where only now we've come to an understanding that without the leader, we're not going to get anywhere, are we?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Good subject. Very important. Again, answer in one word. You use the word Ummah.
Yeah.
Ummah.
What it means in Arabic?
We can write a book about it.
Yeah, but what does it mean?
Let me explain it.
Please.
Ummah, one nation under God, in a true sense.
Oh, America claims that. They say they are one nation
well,
under God.
Well, that's a different story. To be an Ummah,
yeah.
The word Umm in Arabic, yeah. Which means mother, It is said Umm for mother in Arabic,
right.
Because the child intends his mother. The intention has to be there.
Ah.
Ummah, one nation, knowingly, purposely trying to go under the banner of one God.
One God, yes.
This is one way.
Sure.
Again, about that zero, let me explain it again in a different way. I would like to give you examples,
sure,
materialistic example.
Sure,
this
sure.
is one way in yeah, order
so
to understand.
Let's get,
In order to understand this spiritual thing, the deep ma'rifah, knowledge of, by the way, the whole universe is full of so many different phenomena. We're not claiming we understand all of them, but we can try. To tell you what that how that zero in reality is, and how that particular one works, which makes the slogan of Allahu Akbar. I give you an example. For a second, for the sake of argument, okay? You don't even have to close your eyes. You can just purposely think about making or building something in your imagination. Let's say a bike.
Right.
Bicycle.
Right. I've got a picture of a bike in my mind.
So you have it?
I've got it.
Who created it? You.
I did. Yeah.
So in the course of our discourse with each other, forget about it. For a second.
Okay.
That bike. Where is it?
It's gone.
In your imagination. It's gone.
Gone.
It's gone.
It's gone. It's into my subconscious.
That's the zero I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for God's mercy and will and power and one thing to give life to us, to that particular zero. For one
moment.
Less than moment.
This
for when you're talking about this is because all we are familiar with this kind of understanding.
Sure.
For one small fraction of a second, an imaginary, moment, which could be very, very, very in the blink of an eye. If God takes his intention, which is merciful, which is mercy upon us,
of course
for one second, if he takes that intention away, we would end up to be nothing. That's the zero I was talking about. So in order to explain this, that whatever we say, we have to mean it. We have to understand it as much as we could.
Sure.
The word Ummah is of this kind of significance.
Now
back to your question.
My goodness.
What happened to Muslims? We can't say what happened to Islamic
Ummah. No, we're not talking about Islamic Ummah.
Brother, Ummah is something to become. It's not a giving thing.
That's right. And that's what we're trying to get to,
and
isn't it?
This is the reason this is the reason for saying Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him, was and still is a leader in order to lead us to that particular intended, serious business.
Well,
to become one nation.
Well, let me just throw something into this argument. Because Imam Khomeini, I remember, may God bless his great soul, said that the problem at this moment in time with the Muslim world is this, that you do not lead yourselves to the Quran, but you take the Quran to yourselves.
Mm-hmm. In other words, whatever you like,
whatever you like,
desire, whatever you
try
you wish,
to justify.
You try to find a passage in Quran,
to justify.
And apply to yourself.
Now, let me take that just a little step further. Wasn't that the sin that Bani Israel was guilty of, in which they lost all connection with God whatsoever?
In general term, the answer is yes. But there is so many different details attached to it.
Yeah, yeah.
When you go astray, Satan won't let you go.
No, he doesn't.
You know what? Some people think Satan, wants to take your beliefs away, which is true.
Yeah.
He wants to take your religion, your beliefs away.
Yeah, he wants to do
it. But that's not the end of it.
No.
This is where research, studying, deep understanding helps you, help us to understand.
Mm.
You can be a kafir. You can be an infidel, but you could still have some kind of dignity left in you by doing a good virtue, by how you're dealing with people, with your own people,
yes,
to begin with.
Yes, but you're talking about absolute humiliation and abasement.
Exactly. You know, when Satan takes the religion away from you, your beliefs...
That's only one part
This is
of
only
it,
one part.
Part of it.
Okay? But he won't let go. That's not good enough for him, because he swears by God. He swears by God that I'm going to take him all the way to the hellfire.
So he's going to abase him.
Okay?
Mm.
So the disgrace will follow. The disgrace
this
is this.
Yeah.
You're not only without any beliefs, which gets you to the point of being zero again.
Yeah.
But he wants you to be disgraced totally.
In the sight of Allah subhanahu wa
ta'ala. In the sight of Allah. Then in the sight of humanity.
Yeah. And the sight of humanity as well, yes.
No, we have to be very careful to study this thing.
Sure.
Again, research is to study something, a phenomenon or something, very, very carefully. Mm. That makes it
in, research. In order to draw proper conclusions.
It's not just to look for something.
No, no.
You have to research. You have to get back to the point again.
Yeah, but the thing is that, when you do that research, it's just a stepping stone to a wider body of knowledge.
And it's only a tool.
Yeah, it's only a tool. We're not talking about something that ends
Let's not
there.
Get carried, away with it. You say, okay, I'm a researcher. Yeah. So what?
So what?
Where
do we go from here?
Yeah. All we have to trying to, find the right path, which is a straight path, and stay on it. Mm. You can be on the right path.
Yeah.
But again, devil is not going to go anywhere.
No.
Because it's swear by the power of God Almighty, that I'm going to take every single of this so-called creature of yours, except for those that I cannot mess with.
Well, Dr. Hasni, you take us to a very, very important point in this discussion, a very significant point in this discussion. In every revolution, there's a kind of demon, if you like.
And we've seen so many of them.
Yeah, there's a kind of hate figures in revolutions. I mean, if you take the 1789 French Revolution, the aristocracy were the demons of that revolution.
And the guillotines.
And the guillotine, cutting their heads off.
Cutting
or whatever.
Heads off and so on and so forth.
And even Robespierre of the 1789 revolution in France made the claim that terror, state terror, was a tool and a valid means by which to destroy the enemies of the new republic.
And by the way, the terror back then had a different definition.
Exactly.
There wasn't no good terrorist, bad terrorist. Like,
so I'm not drawing any parallels with the French Revolution. But what I'm saying here is that what...
But the idea, the concept was this, Brother John, really to terrorize you in a true sense.
Yeah.
To scare you away from what your goal might be.
But exactly.
And not necessarily by physically assassinate you.
Yeah.
So we have to be... very careful about this stuff.
That's
because
quite
nowadays, the word terror, terrorist, is used in a broad way. And so, selective one, as far as the dirty politician concerned.
What I'm saying is that this was a materialistic revolution.
Okay.
1789, this liberty, egality, fraternity.
Give me liberty or give me death.
Yeah, give me brotherhood, give me liberty, give me equality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
That was the three slogans of the French Revolution. The reality is something entirely different, but that was in a materialistic sense. I'm trying to just draw parallels with the fact that, in a context where Europe was talking about enlightenment, we're talking about something here far more significant than that. We're talking about a reality for which even the French Republic is far and miles away from and still hasn't understood this concept yet, about what the true reality and nature of man is. They've had these wonderful slogans of egality, of equality, liberty, and brotherhood, and fraternity. But Islam is way ahead of all that.
Way ahead.
Now, what I'm seeing here is that there is this claim, like every revolution, it has its demons. And as you say, it has its enemies. But Imam Khomeini didn't hate anyone. He didn't say things out of just simply trying to justify that the Iranian masses would all cling to this particular slogan because he just felt that was the right thing to say for the moment. When you are saying that the United States of America is the great Satan, he means it in the context of what you've just said, that it's not enough for us just to abandon Islam. It's not enough for us to forget about Tawheed. It's not enough for us to become, as you say, unbelievers. They want to really humiliate this country so that people forget about it wherever it is on the map. They think Iran is some petrol station in Dallas somewhere.
So many different things, and I have to touch as many as I can.
Yeah.
The reason for that humiliation? Lifestyle.
Yeah, of course it is.
Look at about the Western lifestyle.
Yeah.
Okay, they take our beliefs away. Mm. They won't let go.
No.
The disgrace part comes here.
Yeah.
Homosexuality.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
I mean, how low can you get?
Exactly. But as you see, it'll go
further. You know the story about Sodom and Gomorrah?
Yeah.
And the story goes on.
And on.
I'm trying to be so precise about this
thing. That's right. Because we're going back to the Quran.
Because we're going back to the Quran again.
Quran again.
And we have to cover so many different issues.
Issues, yes. Because what I'm saying is that Imam...
The other statement I should add in this particular one, because you mentioned the word claim again, and you draw a good parallel between different revolutions. My answer to you is this. Words have to be matched with
action.
Again, another expression, which makes sense, which is true. Mm. Practice what you preach.
And Imam Khomeini lived up to that.
This is where the church went wrong too. I mean, this
of
is all a long story.
Of course it is.
But in order to understand, remember the one of the introduction I gave you, and it was kind of lengthy, you know, and it seems like at the time it was getting boring or whatever. But the thing is this: we have no other way around it except to analyze all this stuff and constantly come back to it.
Yes,
this is very important.
Yeah, and broaden the
and
model.
Don't forget about
it. Yeah, yeah. It has to be comprehensive.
Has to be. Okay? So the difference between all the revolutions, the materialistic, okay, the worldly revolution, with this particular one, which we say, proudly we say, the Islamic revolution.
Yes.
Which happened in Iran 30-some years ago. Still is going on.
Yes.
Do you hear anything about French Revolution?
No,
it was
we don't.
So good.
I mean,
why you don't hear about it?
Yeah, because
I'm not here to answer all these questions.
No, no.
All if I succeed in doing one thing on this program, you know, God willing, that's more than I can handle.
Sure.
And that thing is this: to bring to your attention the kind of question, the kind of path that you should take in order to study different cases.
Exactly.
And this is why humanity still has a lot to work on.
Yeah.
I mean, talking about the propaganda machine,
constantly
bombarding
with
mere lies,
lies and hypocrisy,
lies, insulting, follows with insulting, threatening,
bullying,
wasting sources.
Yes,
who's going to be responsible for this?
That's right.
Who's going to answer it? Nobody. All those empty claims. Okay.
Yeah.
Of course, they're going to say, you know, the other side of the defense, the grass is greener. I mean, this is a promise.
Yeah.
But is it really? Is it greener?
Mm. Well, that's up to debate, isn't it? I mean,
this is all in the shape of questions.
Yeah, because as you say, that's the what do you call the proof in the pudding is in the eating. So that's exactly it.
I give you another example. The criteria in order to do the system of check and balance. You know how where you go wrong? Contradiction. 2 + 2 = 4.
Four.
It's four for you, or it's four for me, or it's four for both of us.
Mm. That's the reality.
2 + 2 = 4 on Saturday. How about Friday?
It'll be 4 on Friday.
On Friday.
But they want to make you believe that it's 5.
They want to make you
believe it's 5 on a Friday.
That African lives differently than European.
Yeah.
And Asian.
Yeah.
And Latin America.
Yeah.
And U.S.
Yes.
And Mexico, for that matter.
Yeah.
And we live this. We cannot betray ourselves in order to think differently, because we want to think differently. This is very important also.
Sure.
Contradiction. Anytime 2 + 2 = 4, something's wrong. Something, as they say in the state, something seriously wrong.
Right. Let me throw something else at you, because, of course, I mean, you're old enough to remember this. And, you know, there was the Cuban Revolution. That was the way back in the 60s. There was also a revolution in Nicaragua around about the same time.
Sandinistas.
Yeah, the Sandinistas. Back in 79.
It was coincidentally. The timing was the same.
So it was the same. But we have to ask the question, what makes the difference between, say, the Sandinista revolution, which was based on a Marxist ideology or something similar to that, and the divine revolution? Because the divine revolution is something that Imam Khomeini impressed a great deal on the rest of the world, which is why we're still living it. We're still in the process of this, because, as you say, whatever has happened in the Muslim world in the past, Well, that's the past. But we are trying to get to the Islamic goal, which is from the Quran. And that is about purification and perfection. And what the slogan is saying, Allahu Akbar, in the beginning, is that without the spiritual dimension, there's no success for mankind.
Very good question. Very good question. And I'm trying very hard to explain it the best way I can.
Yeah, but do your best.
I want to give it a shot.
Sure.
First of all, divine task, divine mission requires divine understanding. Let me talk about narration.
Yes.
From the impeccables.
Yes, from the infallibles, yes. The infallible imams.
Something to the fact that the price, listen to this word. And again, the word means a lot of things. If you understand what it means, then it takes you to what it's supposed to.
Sure.
The price of your body is heaven.
Mm. The price of your body is
the
heaven.
The price of your body, the way you live,
is heaven.
Materialistically,
is heaven.
Is heaven.
Sure.
Hell is not made for you.
No.
You're human, for God's sake.
Mm.
Again, goes back to the definition.
Yeah.
God willing, I have to get to this Quranic reference on due time.
Sure.
Okay? The price of your body is heaven, but the price of your soul is only God. Think about what I said.
Exactly.
And the impeccable says
that's
this.
Right. That's right.
So that makes it what? That makes it more interesting, yet more difficult.
Mm.
In order to value yourself, this is important.
Mm.
This is where humanity go wrong.
Yeah.
You remember?
Mm.
Satan wants to take you to the wrong way.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
To a dark alley of disbelief.
And abasement.
Then disgrace you.
Disgrace you.
The disgrace part is this, that you lose your soul.
Soul.
Brother, if you own something in this materialistic world, let's say you cannot pay your mortgage on your house. I like to give you these examples.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the way of Quranic teaching and understanding. Any occasion wants to tell to teach you something very important, give you examples. And the definition, for example, is this. To show you something feelable, sensible, with all these five senses, in order to think to take you to a different level.
Sure.
This is the definition of mathal, examples. I give you examples. If you're behind paying your mortgage, what a bank will do, and they're good at it. They're doing it in U.S., they're doing it in U.K.
Right.
I'm sure they're going to be doing it in Scotland.
Sure.
Okay?
Well, it's happening already.
What they do? If you're behind paying your car payment, they take it away.
Well, first of all, there's a warning, and then you're thrown out.
The final act.
They're
going to take it away.
Yeah.
But with God, it doesn't work like that. See? When talking about references, you talk about the reality. You're talking about the greatness of a unique, I should say. When you say fetra, the mere translation, you know, to give it to you in a nutshell, the fetra is a particular, unique creation. The Torah suggests that. Those who are familiar with the word fetra,
yes,
that Torah, at the end, it suggests that this is a unique one. This is not the Torah of, you know, in Arabic, we have two kind of genders.
Right.
For every word.
Male,
male and female.
Female.
But that's not the case.
No.
Okay?
Mm.
And so what's the price of your soul? Let me put it this way. If you owe God something by disobeying him in the hereafter, do you have money to pay in order to release yourself from being hostage?
No.
What have you lost? What they take as a hostage? If you want to use this phrase.
Yeah.
They take your own reality, your own soul.
So.
This is very important.
Yes.
So beyond this material, again, this is not repetition. This is important issues.
Yes.
And we might come back to it again.
Yeah.
So the least reward for your body is what? Heaven.
Heaven.
But how about your soul? You're made of a two different kind of whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Whatever things I should call it.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah. Composition.
Composition.
You're a composition.
I even don't use the word composition.
Yeah.
Things.
Things.
Things is a common word, brother, in every single language.
Sure.
In Arabic, we call it shay.
Sure.
And there is no exclusion.
Sure.
It includes everything.
Sure.
In Farsi, we call it a different name. In English, we call it thing.
Yeah.
This humanity, what we call Bashar, or insan, Bashar is referring to the skin.
Sure.
Insan, it goes a little bit further. And the root meaning of it, that's a totally different subject. We're not going to get into that.
Sure.
Because our time is limited, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the thing is this. You are made differently. You are a unique. That's why the angel didn't understand.
Mm.
Why are you doing this?
Yeah, because I couldn't understand what the human
was
all about.
What was the
response? Well, I know what you do not know.
I know what you do not know. Do you think the angel find out? Of course they did.
Yeah.
During the course of history, the course of time, they saw the movement of Ashura.
Mm.
God putting Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, on one side, they said, look, that's why I created this.
Yes.
This is the Khalifa. This is the successor of my mission, my being. Now the angel, they could think about it.
Yes.
But before, they didn't pay attention to the word successor. They thought it's something, just like whatever, their imagination or their background of whatever they witnessed, maybe.
Well, I mean, this brings us back to what we said in our previous program as well, that the combination of both the Quran and the Holy Prophets, Ahlul Bayt, is what gives us the ingredients that we need to get that God into, to have that reward of our soul as God.
And Brother Ejaz, this is very important. God put this in my mind to say it.
Hmm.
The same way that Imam Hussein was a good example for angels to see what a successor might be. Okay? Because we're talking about the man who changed the world and still is. And will be.
Hmm.
Okay? I keep repeating this.
That's right.
Because this is the belief that we're talking about.
Yeah.
God also showed the angels Imam Khomeini. You see?
Yes.
In the 20th century, at the time that everybody's giving up.
Giving up on religion.
Giving up of everything, of hope.
Yeah.
God is holding Imam Khomeini upright and say, look, this is a good example why I created this.
And
it was worth it.
Yes. And of course, of the fact that, as you quite rightly said, this world is not going to be without a successor, and therefore Imam Khomeini was the example for us in the late 20th century. Dr. Hosni, thanks very much for your valuable contribution. Again, we have run out of time in this session, but in the next session, I hope that we will now carry on with this argument with the impact of what Imam Khomeini did with the great Satan. So let's get into that argument in the next session. But it leaves me just to say, may the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all, and thank you for our audience who have been listening to us today. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.